1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
News talk and sports on both sides of the dial from Wisconsin Rapids and beyond. Locally grown radio 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Liberty Mutual Insurance.
I'm Tom Foti in Washington. There have been enough aviation incidents of late for federal transportation officials to hold an industry safety summit on hand. People from airlines, unions, airports, and others. National Transportation Safety Board Chairwoman Jennifer Homendy.
There have been far too many close calls and near collisions recently, any of which could have had devastating consequences with precious lives lost. The NTSB is currently investigating 6 runway incursions since January.
Now to Amarillo, Texas. Correspondent Christina Ruffini watching a federal lawsuit that could ban a common abortion pill, not just in Texas, but around the country.
Members of the public and press lined up before dawn outside the courthouse. Harper Metcalf was one of a handful of pro-abortion rights demonstrators.
Millions of women have lost access to abortion care, especially here in Texas. So the access to medication abortion is one of the last options that we have.
The case was filed by anti-abortion activists in Amarillo, where the only federal judge is a Trump-appointed conservative who has ruled against abortion rights in the past. Also in Texas, a state takeover of schools from local officials in Houston.
The head of the Texas Education Agency making the announcement that the democratically elected Houston School District Board of Trustees will be replaced by a TEA Board of Managers. Mike Morath said in a statement that in prior years, the Houston Board did not focus on improving student outcomes. Local state rep Ron Reynolds calls it a Republican power grab.
If TEA can take over the largest school district in Texas as a result of just one failing school, who's to say that other school districts aren't next?
Chris Fox for CBS News, Austin.
The family of a Mississippi black man's calling on the Justice Department to investigate what they say is his murder. 25-year-old Rasheem Carter vanished in October after telling his mother he was being chased by white men shouting racial slurs.
Civil rights attorney Ben Crump says Carter was dismembered and the family needs
the highest levels of law enforcement
to administer justice. The county sheriff now says he hasn't ruled out the possibility of murder. Allison Keyes, CBS News.
On the weather watch, lots of digging out from snow in New England and way too much water in once bone dry California.
An all too common sight throughout the Bay Area. The high winds and then high water flooded the first floor of Maria Sid Medina's home.
You just can't get a contractor out here right now with the rain.
And more rain is in the forecast.
CBS News correspondent Carter Evans overseas just before a South Korean-Japanese summit. Word of yet another North Korean test firing of another intercontinental ballistic missile. This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual Insurance.
Let's be real. Mopping is a hassle. You have to fill the bucket, pushing a wet, heavy mop around, then cleaning the mop when you're done so it doesn't grow bacteria. A hassle on top of a hassle. Try Swiffer WetJet. With Swiffer WetJet, you start with a fresh pad and cleaning solution every time. And when you're done, you just toss the pad. Swiffer WetJet. The faster, easier, cleaner way to clean your floors.
Oh, O'Reilly! Protect your engine against sludge and wear with a synthetic oil change. O'Reilly Auto Parts has 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil for $35.95. Plus, get 2 times O-Rewards points. Our professional parts people can recommend the supplies you need, including a filter, funnel, shop towels, drain pans, and more. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts or visit O'ReillyAuto.com.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.
The Devil's Advocates radio show, the last segment of the day. If you got something to say, hit us up right now for your crew to tease at 844-967-2789.
I thought they were Crudy Takes.
Crudy's Takes. See, man, it all comes back around to Sports Talk Live.
Something like that.
My wife wants some vegetables for crudité.
You know what I mean?
Listen Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. for the Devil's Advocates radio show.
From the Civic Media News Desk, I'm Melissa Kay. Here's what you need to know. Following is a list of upcoming meetings in the listening area for Thursday, March 16th. In Wood County, the Golden Sands Resource Conservation and Development Council Incorporated Finance Personnel Committee will meet at 9 a.m. at the River Block Building in Wisconsin Rapids in room 206. Following that, the Water Resource Committee, as well as the Forestry, Agriculture, and Wildlife Committee will meet at 10:15. The regular Business Executive Committee meeting will follow at 11 a.m. The Wisconsin Rapids Historic Preservation Commission meeting will take place at 4 p.m. in the Council Chambers at City Hall. It will also be streamed live on the City of Wisconsin Rapids Facebook page. The City of Stevens Point Deer Management Committee will meet at 7:30 a.m. by teleconference. They will hear updates on the 2022 final deer numbers, the 2023 DNR Urban Wildlife Abatement Grant, summer goose plans, and solicit bids for deer culling. I'm Melissa Kay for Civic Media News.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Cloudy skies overnight with a low of 36. Winds out of the south, 8 to 15 miles per hour. Cloudy skies expected again tomorrow. Scattered rain showers likely. High temperatures reach up to 40. Overcast skies tomorrow night. Mixed precipitation likely. Lows level off around 25. About an inch of snow tomorrow night. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 41.
Your place for this area's news, talk, and sports. We are locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
Our ha-ha fun time power hour.
So it goes, so it goes, so it goes, so it goes.
You need some whoop-whoop-whoop-boing, you know?
Absolutely.
So it goes, so it goes, so it goes, so it goes.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time, this is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am not Kristen Bry. Kristen is off today. My name is Dan Schaefer, and I'm filling in as your guest host today. We've made it through 2 hours of the show. I haven't had our producer have to rush over to the bleep button just yet, so we're doing great. And Kristen had some pretty exciting stuff happen today, too. She had her content on Instagram, on the As Goes Wisconsin Instagram, shared by one Julia Louis-Dreyfus. That is pretty exciting. She had a great video about the upcoming Wisconsin Supreme Court race. So I would encourage everybody to check that out if you're missing Kristen today on your airwaves. And again, if you're unfamiliar with me and my work, my name is Dan Schaefer. I am the founder of the Recombobulation Area, a weekly opinion column and online publication covering news and politics in Milwaukee and Wisconsin. And I'm very excited to introduce our next guest, Justin Worland, who is a Washington, D.C.-based senior correspondent at Time Magazine covering climate change and the intersection of policy, politics, and society. He will be giving the keynote speech tomorrow at a clean energy event at Discovery World in Milwaukee, organized by WIS Politics and WIS Business, which will focus on how federal funding will drive changes in how we heat and cool our homes, how we commute, and how we compete in a worldwide energy market. So, Justin, thank you so much for joining us here on As Goes Wisconsin.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me. It's good to be here in Milwaukee, and hoping that we can get Julia Louis-Dreyfus to share this segment.
that'd be pretty exciting, huh? Lots, you know, that would certainly give us a bigger audience to talk about these issues. I'm very interested. Glad you are joining our show here today. And interested to learn more about what you have to say about the Inflation Reduction Act and in this speech tomorrow at the WIS Politics event. So what are some of the big picture things that you are planning to discuss?
Yeah, I would say one sort of high level framing when I think about the Inflation Reduction Act and I think about climate change and climate policy more broadly is, you know, the immense challenges and also the immense opportunities, right? So this is a huge deal. It's a lot of money, just $369 billion, just sort of conservatively from the federal government. There's billions and billions more if you start to dig into how some of these line items actually play out. And that money is going to get pumped across the economy, creating opportunities for new jobs, creating opportunities, as you alluded to, for people to retrofit their homes, to do energy efficiency. And you know, it's going to change the way that the U.S. plays on a global stage, right? And that's important for geopolitics and sort of, you know, these lofty things about how we trade and what, you know, what how we interact with other countries. But it also means something about, you know, what jobs are in our own backyards, you know, here in Wisconsin or around the country. So lots of opportunity. And then there's challenges, right? There's supply chains that need to be built up. There are, as I was alluding to, geopolitical challenges that come out of that. So I'm going to talk about all of that. I think the key thing, you know, along with that, as I alluded to, is this is something that really matters for our day-to-day lives. And I want people to walk away understanding that and believing that.
Yeah. So, I mean, this obviously a huge piece of legislation that was passed by the Democratic majorities in Congress last year, signed by President Biden. You know, it's going to be one of his signature pieces of legislation passed. It kind of, you know, it was the pieces of the Build Back Better deal, the massive Build Back Better deal. Much of it did not make it into the Inflation Reduction Act, but much of it did. And so I think it's really important to take a closer look at these issues, because, you know, the name Inflation Reduction Act, I mean, let's be honest, it's not really what this bill is mostly about. And you're talking about a lot of the climate and clean energy components of this. So let's bring that home a little bit. How is that going to impact us here in the state of Wisconsin?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think every place across this country has the industries that they've, you know, that they've had for you know, years and decades, and all of those are sort of changing, and you know, everybody's sort of touched in different ways. Obviously, the Midwest more broadly, huge home to transport sector, lots of manufacturing jobs still, you know, in the Midwest. And just a few weeks ago, I was in Michigan, where Ford was unveiling a new battery plant, which is, you know, they said would not have happened without the Inflation Reduction Act. So there's opportunities, you know, for the transit sector to sort of bring back some of the jobs that have been lost. And you know, to change you know, places that are that still have those jobs. I mean, Milwaukee here, you know, home of Johnson Controls. Energy efficiency is a huge component, or it's an important component of the Inflation Reduction Act. So there's opportunities for companies like Johnson Controls here in Milwaukee to take advantage, and for consumers and businesses that use those technologies to take advantage of that. So there's lots of growth opportunities. I mean, you know, I don't have the numbers at my fingertips, but this is a huge job opportunity for places like Wisconsin.
Yeah, and as Wisconsin kind of, you know, we're in kind of a period of economic flux in this state, where we've had, you know, traditionally dominated by the manufacturing sector, but obviously that has been a decline for a couple decades now, at least. And, you know, as Wisconsin kind of tries to figure out its path forward, you know, legislation like this can open up some opportunities for you know, kind of what that next step can be. So, you know, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say absolutely. And I think, yeah, I don't think anybody's saying that the manufacturing sector is going to be what it once was. But, you know, there's potential to, you know, bring some of the jobs back, particularly given that the provisions in the Inflation Reduction Act, you know, to take advantage of the tax incentives requires a North American supply chain. And, you know, that's a real incentive for these companies to locate in Wisconsin. I think the big question is, and this sort of remains to be seen, is you know, to what degree do a lot of these companies decide to build, you know, facilities here in Wisconsin, or, you know, I mentioned Michigan, or do they go to places, you know, where that are really trying to you know, offer incentives and have, you know, sort of easier labor laws than, you know, in some places in the Midwest, you know, places like Tennessee, Georgia, they're getting a lot of investment as well. So that's an interesting question to see how that plays out.
Yeah, it's you know, I'm always interested to see like these competitions between the states for these types of things. You know, I think we had an interesting example, you know, last year before, something like that, where the federal decision to, you know, build new build new trucks for the U.S. Postal Service. And that contract ended up, you know, Oshkosh Truck got that contract. And they, instead of building it in Wisconsin, they're ending up building those, starting a new plant in South Carolina to build those. So it's going to be interesting to see if this creates another situation where you have kind of a number of these states with different, you know, labor laws or tax incentives or other requirements, you know, really competing with each other to try and get some of these, take advantage of some of these opportunities with the Inflation Reduction Act.
Yeah, absolutely. Very critical question.
All right. So we are talking with Justin Werland. He's with Time Magazine. He's giving a keynote speech at Discovery World in Milwaukee tomorrow on a clean energy event hosted by WISP Politics and WISP Business. So what are some of the other things with this law about, you know, how, you know, one of the things that mentioned with this is, you know, it's going to change how we heat and cool our homes in a lot of ways. What are some of the impacts that this can have, you know, just on everyday folks and in their homes?
Yeah, well, I mean, the incentives in the Inflation Reduction Act, I mean, I believe the number is something, I don't want to say the number wrong, but there's thousands of dollars in incentives that homeowners can take advantage of for energy retrofits, for things like heat pumps, electric vehicles, which have an interesting sort of, in some cases, an interesting use case to actually attach and serve as a backup power source for homes. All of these are incentivized by the Inflation Reduction Act, and you know. It's cold here today, or colder than where I came from. I'd be looking into how to take advantage of these things, because they, both they're tax incentives that you can take advantage of from the federal government, but they also can lower your energy costs, and that's something that the folks who wrote this legislation are quite proud of. You know, that it also can help everyday people cut their heating and energy costs.
Yeah, this is something I'm, you know, personally interested in, because I'm a homeowner in an old house on the west side of Milwaukee that is not the most energy efficient place to live. Got some old windows, got some old HVAC type stuff in the house. So I think, you know, there's a lot of old housing stock in the state of Wisconsin. So I think, you know, any type of energy efficient improvement opportunities, I think, is going to affect a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it really, if you're a homeowner, it should affect you. I mean, this is something you should be taking a look at, no question.
Yeah, and I think I will be. I think I need to be learning more about what exactly this can offer us homeowners across Wisconsin, you know, and just the larger big picture of kind of how this very big, important, snarly law is going to impact people at the ground level. So we're coming up close to a break here. Justin, you are going to stick with us for another segment. If you have any questions about maybe how this law could impact you, feel free to give us a call. Give us a call at 844-967-2789. Again, that's 844-967-2789. Justin Werland from Time Magazine is going to be joining us for one more segment after the break here. Again, I'm your guest host today. My name is Dan Schaefer, and I'm filling in for Kristen Bry, and we will be right back after the break. Stick with us.
I was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app.
Hey, what's up, y'all? I'm Kelly Clarkson, and as the daughter of a school teacher, I know just how important education is. No matter how old you are or your situation, continuing to learn will enrich your life and help remove barriers you didn't even know were there. So much opportunity, y'all. Whether it's a foreign language, history, or a different way to look at things, take some time each day to learn something new. This message is courtesy of the United States Air Force.
Hello?
Man, where are you? I thought you were coming.
I can't. I'm in bed with the flu.
The flu? Whoa, whoa, whoa. Grandma's about to crowd surf. Man, I'll call you back.
Don't get stuck at home with the flu. A flu shot is safe, effective, and you can get it at the same time as your COVID-19 vaccine. A flu shot is the best way to prevent the flu and its potentially serious complications. Don't get flu FOMO. Learn more at getmyflushot.org.
Brought to you by the AMA, CDC, and the Ad Council.
Parents, we know we can't protect our kids from everything. Eventually, they're going to bump their heads or scrape their knees. But we can protect them from 6 types of cancer. HPV, or human papillomavirus, is a common, preventable virus that can cause cancer later in life. The HPV vaccine prevents human papillomavirus and all the cancers it can cause. The American Cancer Society recommends getting your sons and daughters the HPV vaccine starting at age 9 to protect them later in life.
You're tuned into your home for the Wisconsin Badgers on 97.5 FM and 1320 AM WFHR, locally grown radio.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I'm your guest host today. My name is Dan Schaefer. I'm filling in for Kristen Bry, who is off today, but she's got some pretty exciting stuff going on today. She's got her content being shared and promoted by Julia Louis-Dreyfus, so that's pretty cool. Go check that out over on the As Goes Wisconsin Instagram and Twitter and TikTok and all the different places you find Kristen's work over the course of the week. We are joined for this segment by Justin Warland, who is a journalist at Time Magazine, and he is also giving a keynote speech tomorrow, I believe, at Discovery World in Milwaukee, talking about the Inflation Reduction Act and clean energy, climate change, all sorts of issues wrapped up in that big bill. So this next segment, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the implementation of that. So that bill got passed last year, and, you know, as the process, these processes take a while. So what happens next as this begins to be implemented, you know, on a federal level, on a state level, you know, what should people be paying attention to as this big, important piece of legislation begins to become a reality?
Yeah, well, there's a lot, right? So the Inflation Reduction Act, you know, is implemented through a range of different federal agencies. It requires, you know, uptake from the private sector, state participation. So it really, you know, the thing that you look for first is to see how agencies are crafting the rules, because Congress gives sort of a wide berth, you know, sort of with particulars that need to be defined by agencies. So a lot of that is happening in places like the Treasury Department, happening in places like the Department of Energy, EPA, et cetera. I think, you know, from an average, from a consumer perspective, you know, a lot of those rules are being crafted, as I said, at the Treasury Department. So rules about what kind of tax incentives, you know, what tax incentives look like. You know, that's some of that is we've gotten some of the sort of first drafts of that, and we're going to continue to see more come down the pike. Yeah, as I said, part of this is, you know, the private sector, in some cases, has to take advantage of the tax incentives, things like clean energy tax incentives, you know, for sort of utility scale renewables, or also, you know, there are new technologies like hydrogen, et cetera, that the private sector has to buy into. And then, you know, there are some programs that states will, you know, participate in. This is actually from the bipartisan infrastructure law, but that kind of gets looped in with the Inflation Reduction Act. There's, you know, say every state has submitted plans for how they're going to build an electric vehicle network, charging network in their state, and how they can get federal funds from that. So it takes a lot of different players to kind of come together and turn this thing into something that achieves its objectives.
Yeah, to what extent is this kind of following the same process that we saw play out with the bipartisan infrastructure law?
Yeah, it's similar in many ways and different in other ways. I mean, I think the big difference is the emphasis on the private sector and private sector uptake. I mean, this is less about building roads and bridges, charging networks, et cetera, things that the government builds, and I think largely, almost entirely about things that the private sector will build. So part of that is, if there's a consumer incentive, if there's if the government's going to pay for solar panels on your roof or for, energy efficient housing, clearly the private sector is going to provide that because the incentive is there. Part of it is, though, even with things like hydrogen, as I alluded to, or some of these other technologies, there still has to be, the private sector has to believe they can make money off of it, even with these incentives. So I would say that's sort of a difference. Having said that, the two are designed to work together, right? So the bipartisan infrastructure law provides funding to upgrade the grid. That's really critical if you're going to build out clean energy, which is something that the private sector would build. So the two work together, but they're also different.
Yeah, and we've got a big climate change issue to tackle in this country going forward, and we have not really had the infrastructure in place to be able to do that, and this kind of allows that opportunity, in a really meaningful way. And we're seeing some of those effects. We're seeing some of those changes, and people don't always think of Wisconsin as a place that is going to be necessarily impacted greatly by climate change. Just look at the recent winter that we've had, though. We've had a very mild winter. Great Lakes, we're going to get a lot more rain, precipitation going forward. So we're going to be impacted by this in a lot of ways, but also just economically to address some of these issues and find, better energy solutions going forward. And this bill, opens up some opportunities for that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, from a sort of climate perspective, I think it's important to think, okay. I was actually on a panel with the governor Walz of Minnesota last week, and he was talking about how Duluth was named the safest place to be, in a climate apocalypse. And I don't want to overemphasize that Wisconsin is probably not going to be, turned into a flooded place like Florida. But at the same time, like, as you said, there are impacts for agriculture, and you don't want to miss the sort of bigger picture, which is that the world is changing. Industry is changing. There are going to be all sorts of things like migration that changes. So no place is an island, right? And Wisconsin will be affected. Having said that, it's also a really good opportunity. As we were saying earlier, it's an opportunity for new industry. It's an opportunity to really prepare for this 21st century economy.
Justin Warland, journalist from Time Magazine, he's going to be giving the keynote speech tomorrow at Discovery World in Milwaukee in an event presented by WIS Politics and WIS Business. Really interesting stuff. I'm fascinated to see kind of how this really, once the rubber meets the road, I think that's when things get interesting with a lot of these big bills like that. So I'm interested to see kind of what happens going forward. So Justin, thank you so much for joining us. I encourage people to check out your keynote speech tomorrow in Milwaukee if they have the opportunity. And when we get back from the break after this, we're going to be joined by Patty Vasquez, who's going to be talking to us about our neighbors to the south in Illinois and about the mayor's race in Chicago. So stick with us for that one. Justin, thank you again for joining us. But great conversation.
Thanks for having me.
From Wisconsin Rapids to Stevens Point, your news talk and sports is on 97.5 FM, locally grown radio.
It was a normal day.
He was in some minor accident, a fender bender.
And I had this impulse to call him, but I didn't, because I thought I could call him later that week.
He abandoned the car. He came home and he shot himself without ever talking to anyone.
When I came home that night and I found her, they told me that she had shot herself, and I couldn't believe it.
I asked if he was okay.
Taking a gun into your house for protection is a terrible myth.
Once you pull that trigger, that's it. There is no coming back.
65 Americans a day die by gun suicide. Store your gun securely, locked, unloaded, and away from ammunition. Help stop suicide. Learn more at infamilyfire.org. Brought to you by Brady and the Ad Council.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad. All he had to say was,
"Hey, you got this. Just breathe." Hey. Hey, we're pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
And we're live here outside the Perez family home, just waiting for the... And there they go, almost on time this morning. Mom is coming out the front door strong with a double-arm kid carry. Looks like Dad has the bags. Daughter is bringing up the rear. Oh, but the diaper bag wasn't closed. Diapers and toys are everywhere. Ooh, but Mom has just nailed the perfect car seat buckle for the toddler. And now the eldest daughter, who looks to be about 9 or 10, has secured herself in the booster seat. Dad zips the bag closed, and they're off. Ah, but looks like Mom doesn't realize her coffee cup is still on the roof of the car. And there it goes. Oh, that's a shame. That mug was a fam favorite.
Don't sweat the small stuff. Just nail the big stuff, like making sure your kids are buckled correctly in the right seat for their age and size. Learn more at nhtsa.gov/the right seat.
Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat.
Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
From the Civic Media News Desk, I'm Melissa Kay. Here's what you need to know. There was a high-speed chase through Wisconsin Rapids last night. Multiple Wood County squads chased a vehicle containing at least two people through town at high speeds. At one point, the vehicle was traveling eastbound in the westbound lane on Highway 54. After entering Portage County, officers there picked up the pursuit, which ended near Woodland Court in Plover. The occupants of the vehicle were arrested and transported to Wood County Jail. Both had warrants out for their arrest. Residents of Wisconsin Rapids who witnessed the chase expressed concern for themselves and officers. Several were in danger of a head-on collision when coming across the vehicle going the wrong way on Highway 54. It seems there were no injuries as a result of the chase. In sports, the Badgers beat Bradley last night. They'll play Liberty Sunday. The Bucks beat Phoenix. I'm Melissa Kay for Civic Media News.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Cloudy skies, overnight with a low of 36. Winds out of the south, 8 to 15 miles per hour. Cloudy skies expected again tomorrow. Scattered rain showers likely. High temperatures reach up to 40. Overcast skies tomorrow night. Mixed precipitation likely. Lows level off around 25. About an inch of snow tomorrow night. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 41.
Some things up for today, because I am a regular guest on your show. Where you have me join the show every Wednesday on Driving It Home to talk about all the craziness that is happening in Wisconsin politics. So now I'm turning the tables on you, because we gotta bring you on here so we can talk about all the craziness that's happening in Chicago politics. So before we jump into the conversation here, we have been kind of focusing on mayoral elections throughout the show. So in the first hour of the show, we had Dr. Kristen Lyerly, who's involved with local politics in Green Bay. She was telling us about the mayoral election in Green Bay. We were joined by Scott Gordon of Tone Madison. He was telling us about the mayoral election happening in Madison. We've also got a mayoral election happening south of the border. in Chicago. And I think it's really important for us in Wisconsin to be paying attention to this election as well, because it is an important race for our just a neighboring state. It is an important race, I think, for the whole Midwest, because I think Chicago is such an important piece of our regional economy for so many things. So what's the Wisconsin Supreme Court race, I've been focusing so much on that I haven't had a whole lot of time to pay a lot of attention to what's happening in the race for mayor of Chicago. So what's going on down there?
Well, in relation to the fact that, how it affects Wisconsin, I mean, this is also a big labor race, because Paul Vallis, wherever he has gone, has worked to diminish the rights of teachers, the ability to bargain and have access to representation. I mean, in Philadelphia, in New Orleans, pretty much everywhere he's gone, he has opened more charter schools. In New Orleans, after Katrina, he went in, did his work, and it's almost entirely charter schools. I don't think people realize this. It's almost entirely charter schools in New Orleans right now. And during the pandemic, Paul Vallis talked a lot about how we've got to break the contract. If they're not going to go back into the schools, you know, we've got to make sure that our teachers aren't getting homeschooled. He connected a lot of what was happening during the pandemic with violence in Chicago to kids not being in school. And it was rough. It's pretty rough. And then you have Brandon Johnson, who is a former Chicago public teacher, a Cook County commissioner. He has been on the record after George Floyd is saying, you know, we need to defund the police. He's trying to figure out that space now. So you really have kind of the two ends of the political spectrum in Chicago. We have a lot of conservatives here, especially in the neighborhoods like where I live, where there's a lot of cops and firefighters. And I also live near a lot of teachers. So I think it really reflects, where we are as a city right now. We are bumping heads with each other, what it means to have safe streets, what it means to have quality and free education. So it's kind of the perfect battle in many ways. And I'm really concerned about the direction we're going in.
Yeah, it's an interesting race. Paul Vallis and Brandon Johnson emerged from this primary. So you have Lori Lightfoot, the incumbent mayor, who did not make the runoff, did not make the final ballot. So she will be a one-term mayor. Essentially making it an open race for mayor of Chicago. And you have kind of the two candidates, from my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, who are kind of farthest apart on the political spectrum among the candidates that were running. So you had Lori Lightfoot, you had Congressman Chuy Garcia, who both came up short. I was kind of surprised that Garcia, just having a little bit of national profile, that he didn't do as well as he did. But you have these two candidates, probably the farthest apart of any of the two candidates running in the primary, and you have a real contrast on the ballot on April 4th, the same day we're going to be voting here in Wisconsin as well.
See, this is why you're an excellent guest, because when I talk to you, you give all that background and the context, whereas I'm in it every day and I'm like, here's where Vallis is and here's where Brandon Johnson is. But, you know, so there were nine candidates in it was our general election, so we don't do primaries. And here is a little bit of background. After Harold Washington became the first black mayor of Chicago, the conservative Democrats in Chicago looked to the Dixiecrats and were like, how do they do it down there in order to preserve this sort of more conservative element? So they eliminated primaries. There is no, you know, Democrat running against a Republican anymore. You pretty much, everyone says they're a Democrat in order to even compete. And that's how we end up with the general. And then if someone is not able to win it outright with 50+1, we end up with a runoff. And this is the second runoff since 2015. So back to Chuy Garcia, who did run against Rahm Emanuel in 2015, forced him into a runoff. And really, that was that song you played at the beginning about there was an election and nobody showed up. It hovered around the low 20% of people that showed up and reelected Rahm Emanuel. The problem with Chuy Garcia's campaign was that he came in so late. I mean, after petitions were already circulating, I think there might have only been 3 weeks left. Vallis had announced a year ago, I think in April of 22. Brandon Johnson announced not, I think, in the fall after that. So it was, and he had already locked up Brandon Johnson locked up the support of CTU, which is one of the most powerful unions in the city. Paul Vallis was on his way to locking up FOP. And here's the thing about Vallis was that he has, and he talks a lot about this. He brags about his relationships with the police department. He says, you know, I negotiated their contract. The police department did not have contract for over, I want to say maybe 3 years. It was quite a long time. They did not have a contract at the end of Rahm Emanuel's term and going into Lori Lightfoot's. And he says, I did it for free. Did you? Did you do it for free when you then get the endorsement and the full support of the Chicago Police Department? That doesn't seem like it's free to me.
Interesting. Very interesting. You know, maybe a little bit of quid pro quo going on there. Is that what you're suggesting? I don't know.
Yeah, 1,000%.
So we're talking to Patty Vasquez about the race for mayor of Chicago. I know this show is called As Goes Wisconsin, but we are paying attention to what's going on with our neighbors in Chicago because we want there to be a thriving, growing Chicago as well. And I think, you know, you mentioned something at the outset that there are, you know, Chicago always thought of as a very Democratic city. And it, of course, is. But there, you know, just based on the numbers of how many people live in the city of Chicago, you're going to have a lot of conservatives there. You're going to have a lot of, you know, Republican aligned voters. And I think about this with Milwaukee as well, because, you know, Milwaukee is so much bigger than every other city in the state that the number one, you know, the most Trump votes for any municipality in Wisconsin came from Milwaukee. And just because it's 25%, you know, 25% of the city is going to vote Republican, that's still a huge chunk of the city. So, you know, we had a situation with our mayoral election a year ago in Milwaukee where, you know, we had a primary and basically the Republican candidate, who's now a state representative, Republican state representative working in Madison, he, Bob Donovan, he's basically a Republican. So he got about 25% of the vote once we finally got past the primary and Cavalier Johnson got that kind of a huge number, more than 70% of the vote to win a full term as mayor. So is that a similar dynamic to what's happening in Chicago? Are there, you know, is the expectation that a lot of the more, you know, progressive, liberally aligned candidates are going to rally behind Brandon Johnson, or are people kind of split there depending on kind of who they had been supporting?
That is something that has been concerning me for the last couple weeks. I talked to a Democrat that I've been working with for over a decade. I advocate for families that have an individual in their family with disabilities for, and I don't want to name their name because I was very, disappointed when they told me that they would be voting for Vallis. So Vallis seems to be drawing on Republicans, 1,000% there. I'm going to say that I should stop saying that because nothing is 1,000, but he is drawing on Republican support. And I'm not just saying that. He's getting all kinds of attention on Fox News. Conservatives across the country, talk show hosts are definitely salivating at the idea of a very conservative, I guess he's saying he's a Democrat, taking over Chicago, a pro-police, anti-teacher, teachers union candidate taking over the city. And the thing that I watch, and so I ran for office in 2020. So I have a somewhat of a handle on my neighborhood. You know, I am a progressive, but I also grew up around a lot of cops and firefighters, and they kind of, you know, many of them supported me. The candidate who did win was even more progressive than I am, at least on paper. So I have, and then we also, there was a cop in the race. So in a three-way race, I got 38% of the vote. And the reason I mention that is because I have an idea of what voter turnout can be like. And that was right when the pandemic was starting. In this general election, 42% of my ward showed up. And most of them, the majority of them voted for Paul Vallis. I think it was like 75% voted for Paul Vallis. Like Lori Lightfoot got 5.7%. Brandon maybe got like 7%, somewhere in those numbers. And that's unsettling. The wards north of me and a little bit west of me came out in similar numbers, 45%, when the city turnout was like 36%. So that tells you that there's a higher turnout. There was a lot of motivation to vote against Lori Lightfoot. There was a lot of motivation to vote for Paul Vallis. So it's not just a vote against somebody, but they had someone that they want to get in there. And you can see it with all the signs, like our alderman, also very conservative, basically had Trump rallies in front of the police station a couple years ago. So, and another thing, that's as far as conservatives in my community, 52% in 2016 for Trump. 50 in Chicago.
In Chicago.
So in Chicago. And if you folded the map with the south side of Chicago with Mount Greenwood, which also has a lot of cops and firefighters, similar numbers. And these are and another thing is to remember that we are one of the most segregated cities in the country. So you have predominantly white. My neighborhood, when I went door knocking as a candidate, my husband could hear me because I had a Bluetooth in just to have someone like with me. And he could hear in the tone of my voice, he would say, do not hug that black person because there are so few. My tone of voice would be like, hey, I'm so happy you're here. It must be so hard. Because there were only six. There were six from September through March. I only had six black people answer the door in my neighborhood. That's it. So that's going to play a big part of this. Racism is going to play a part in this. Conservatism in my neighborhood is going to play a big part. Public safety. And by public safety, that's a dog whistle a lot of times for, you know, the black people are causing a lot of crime.
Yeah.
Really. Neighborhood. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, just as current conservatives across the country like to talk about Chicago, conservatives no matter where your community, they're going to in Wisconsin, always scapegoating Milwaukee. We know with a lot of these coded terms,
yes,
that our friends on some of the other talk radio stations in the region here like to use for some of the problems that Milwaukee's facing. I imagine a fairly similar dynamic,
yeah,
happening in Chicago. We're talking to Patty Vasquez, who is the host of Driving It Home on Driving It Home on WCPT 820 AM, lifelong Chicagoan. She's going to be joining us for one more segment here. So after the break, we're going to be continuing to talk about what's going on in the Chicago mayor's race. Is the top issue in the race their relationship with Wisconsin and Milwaukee? Has that come up at all?
Look, abortion has come up. So
sure.
It's kind of part of the conversation.
Yeah. That's definitely a part of the conversation. Maybe some more Wisconsin residents moving to Chicago if things go a certain way, if things go sideways.
That's why we're trying to organize Fibs for Wisconsin and help Janet Protasiewicz win.
That's right. Well, see, I've been pretty good so far, not having our producer run over to the beep button. So I'm not gonna make him work any harder than he has to with talking about the fibs or the fish or the fish tabs. If anyone knows what a fish tab is, call in the show because I think that's a fun one. So we're gonna be continuing to talk with Patty after the break here. About the race for mayor in Chicago between Paul Vallas and Brandon Johnson. Fascinating race happening just across the border in Wisconsin. How much time we got before the break here, Calvin? Just one more minute. Okay.
All right. So I
have to imagine if one other thing that Chicagoans must be paying attention to happening in Wisconsin right now is whether Aaron Rodgers is going to be in the division going next year. So that's something that we've been monitoring on the show today as well, because this could, anything could happen at any time with Aaron Rodgers potentially getting traded to the Jets. I have to imagine the Chicago fans are ready to see him go.
Well, we're going to be the Arlington Heights Bears soon. So we're not really, I'm not as invested as I used to be. So I wish you the best.
Yeah, that's right. The Arlington Heights Bears against against Jordan Love and the Green Bay Packers. Boy, that's going to be a little weird. All right. Well, stick with us. We're going to be continuing this conversation after the break. My name is Dan Schaefer. I'm filling in as your guest host today on As Goes Wisconsin. Kristen is off, but you can find Kristen's content on Instagram where she.
Don't search through the phone book for hours looking for help. Don't waste time being transferred from department to department looking for answers. United Way's 211 is there to connect you to the programs and services you need. For non-emergency information and referral services, simply dial 211 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Free and confidential information and referral is available throughout Central Wisconsin. Dial 211 and get connected and get answers.
If you came across someone struggling with hunger, how would you recognize them? By their clothes? Their age? The way they speak? Would you notice an 8-year-old girl who's not excited for summer break
because she may not be having lunch again until September?
Or
A single father of two who works three part-time jobs
and still can't put enough food on the table.
Or maybe a mother who cleans offices at night,
hoping to find meeting leftovers to take home to her hungry family.
Or a war veteran who's having a hard time
landing a job and getting back on his feet.
I am the one in eight Americans who struggle with hunger. People you pass by every day but never knew were hungry. I am hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America, 200 Food Banks Strong, and the Ad Council.
Some people won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, can potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
Keep up on the day's news, talk, and sports on Wisconsin's home for locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
1. A dusting of snow Friday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 37 degrees.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, Wisconsin's home for rational talk radio.
Here comes the sun, here comes the sun, and I say it's all right.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. My name is Dan Schaefer. I am your guest host today. If you're unfamiliar with me and my work, I am the founder of the Recombobulation Area, a weekly opinion column and online publication covering news and politics in Milwaukee and Wisconsin. I'm also a regular contributor to Heartland Signal and a regular guest on WCPT 820 with Patty Vasquez, who is our guest here today. She hosts the Driving at Home radio show in Chicago, and I go on her show every week to talk about their crazy neighbors to the north and whatever wild insanity that Wisconsin Republicans are bringing to the news cycle on elections and whatever else. We've been talking a lot about the Wisconsin Supreme Court race lately, so I decided we should turn the tables a little bit today with me guest hosting the show and have Patty join us so she can tell us about our goofy neighbors to the south and about what's going on with their race for mayor, because they have an election the same day that we do. Again, reminder, April 4th, less than 3 weeks away. Early voting, early absentee, in-person absentee voting, less than a week away, starts in the state of Wisconsin. So be ready to vote and be ready to flip that Wisconsin Supreme Court. But Patty is telling us a little bit about what's been happening, about the race for mayor in Chicago. So what have been some of the big things happening lately? And you said you wanted to talk a little bit about what was going on with the impact of social media on this race. So what's going on here?
Sure. So, Paul Vallis began, let me put it this way. He ran in 2019. So he was in that big race. We had 11 candidates. And, you know, this is something that, again, with ranked choice voting, we're talking a lot about that in Illinois now. We're looking at that as a possibility in our state legislature. Lori Lightfoot made it out of that first round in the general election with about 17% of the vote. Tony Preckwinkle, who was the other runoff candidate, had about 16%. So nobody had anywhere near a majority. I contend that when you have too many choices, people choose nothing. That also, I think, suppressed the voter turnout. But the day after that election, I mean, I'm not saying like that, I don't have the exact date, but really quite quickly, Paul Vallis started to be a part of a lot of neighborhood groups. We're just starting to talk about this on my show where people are calling in. They're like, yeah, I remember him being on my neighborhood chats. So like anytime there was violence, he was amplifying that in neighborhood groups and how the police are being handcuffed and hamstringed and we're not letting them do their jobs. He was courting the police support the minute he lost in 2019. And we see that. And he also started speaking at conferences and events that were held by a group called Awake Illinois, which is one of these parents' choice, parents' freedoms groups. And
not woke Illinois, just to be awake.
Awake.
Yes.
No, it's awake. Okay. It's that sort of sarcastic, well, if you're woke, we're awake.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
They're a book banning group. They're an anti-trans group. They call the governor a groomer. They're very aggressive. They have gained a lot of momentum. They were very involved in the gubernatorial race, trying to elect Darren Bailey, who I don't know if you remember, but after the Highland Park shooting, the 4th of July parade where several people lost their lives and a young boy had his spinal cord severed. And his name is Cooper. And I had the, experience of working with Cooper a little bit because my son and he were in the hospital at the same time. Beautiful little boy whose life has been altered so dramatically and catastrophically, and of course lives that were lost, and just the trauma of it all. And within less than, I think, 2 hours, Darren Bailey appeared with his campaign signs and a whole group of people. You know, that was very tragic. Now it's time to celebrate. Like, that's the kind of tone, because they didn't want to talk anything about gun violence. They didn't want that to be the conversation. And Awake Illinois was very involved in holding fundraisers, elevating him. And Paul Vallis appeared at some, like, not just appeared, he was on their promotions as a speaker for school choice, for what kids should be taught about public safety. And so all of that is out there. And this is the maddening part of any race, right? Where you're like, but you just, like, we talked about this with Ron Johnson, mm-hmm. right? Like, you can say the craziest things and he's like, that's not what I meant. Or, you know, that's just, that was then, or a lie is not a lie kind of stuff. And so that's what we're seeing with Paul Vallis. Now, Brandon Johnson has some of the language that can be divisive, you know, with defund the police. And And, you know, there's a misunderstanding of what that push was for. We have programs in Illinois now in Chicago where we do send out trauma responders, social workers that go out for domestic violence situations, mental health situations. And that was, you know, unfortunately, the language of defund the police was not reallocate or, you know, where our priorities are, which would also keep police safe. If we are approaching these situations with an impactful intention, then we are keeping them safe as well. But Paul Vallis has been, I would say it's very much in the conservative right-wing vein of driving a message home. And he was very deliberate and precise with it for over 3 years. And now we're seeing the outcome of that.
And from what I understand, he's more or less the front runner in this race, right? He's the favorite to win. Or I mean, I hesitate to, you know, make any mm-hmm. characterizations of a race that I'm not particularly familiar with.
For those who can't see us, I'm massaging I clench my jaw so much. I am hopeful that the grassroots efforts all over the city of Chicago will, first of all, we need voter turnout. We need, mm-hmm. we need to find voters who aren't registered. We need to get young people involved, because that was the lowest turnout that I've seen in a long time. 18 to 24 year olds, I think it hovered around less than 10% wow. for voter turnout amongst young people. I think that they're engaged on the national level, but in Chicago, it's very low numbers. So that's, yeah, the polling seems to be within 5% of each other, mm-hmm. and it goes back and forth as to who's in the lead. So mm-hmm. it's close, and that's a 14% undecided in most cases.
So beyond just the divisive comments and whatever mischaracterization of pushes for criminal justice reform that came out of 2020, what are some of the other things that we should know about Brandon Johnson?
Yes, yeah, that's, you know, I'm so bad, like the terror in my heart, you can hear, because I'm like, and that's a really good point that you bring up, because going after the other candidates, conservatism doesn't necessarily, you know, motivate people. Brandon Johnson has been a community activist. He has been a Cook County commissioner. He knows how to work budgets. He knows how to work with people. He is so well versed on what it means to make sure that kids have a quality education. He is invested in our public transportation. We have been struggling since the pandemic to get ridership up and to have a strong path forward. We, you know, he has a vision for connecting people who are unhoused, because we have a lot of folks who are living at the bus stations, at the train stations, on the trains, and he wants to connect those people with services that will help them out of those situations. I think that he has a vision that, you know, is more pedestrian centric in the sense that obviously we're all car brained, but, you know, he in that sense of, you know, public safety isn't just crime. It's also making sure that people don't get hit by a car. Sorry.
Thanks for all of that, Patty.
I
know. It's a very exciting race that you have in Chicago.
Childhood should be the happiest time of life. But for many children living in poverty with blindness, facial deformities, and other crippling conditions, it's riddled with pain, rejection, shame, and isolation. At Mercy Ships, we're answering the cries of some of the world's most forgotten children and adults through free, life-changing surgeries, surgeries that turn despair into hope. These once heartbroken boys and girls, and many men and women too, are now restored, accepted, and on their way to a life of opportunity and joy. No one can change the world on their own, but together, we can transform it by restoring hope to one person, one child at a time. Volunteers from your community and around the globe are bringing life-changing healing and hope to the forgotten poor. To learn how you too can help change the world, one child at a time, go to mercyships.org.
WFHR, today. Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248 DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
From the